You're listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent in Birmingham, Alabama, a church with a heart for the gospel. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.
The problem when you get a little older, and I never anticipated this, was that you start wearing hearing aids, and then you get invited to places where you need to put these ridiculous things on, microphones on, and then you have this, and of course you can't see. And so it's really a challenge to rise up to the technological side of it, but it's beautifully done, and thank you all for coming. I hope you'll feel that you felt a little understood if you've had a presenting symptom of a difficult child, whether the child is 6 months, and often the seeds of adolescent and adult reactivity and difficulty in a child can actually be, in retrospect, spotlighted in even when the child was very small. It's an extraordinary fact that difficult people start being difficult when they're little and remain so. So the title of this talk is How to Be a Good Father to a Difficult Child of Any Age. Well, there are basically two points that I hope to express to you. And the one is an old point, but it's got to be understood again. And the one is a new point that is crucial. First, we have to return again to what we mean by the law. Now, we use that word in Pauline terms frequently and regularly and normally in life. But in the unique insight of the Christian scriptures, law is any kind of thou shalt or thou shalt not, any kind of value judgment and statement about what you ought to do. And it's almost always correct. That is to say, if you did it, things would go better. But it is incendiarily reaction provocative. In everybody's life who's ever lived here, whether it's you as a child or a teenager, or you as a father. Because the moment you say to somebody, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln, he's going to go out and win every competition in his hot rod Lincoln. Because the voice of no from the father, let alone the mother, even though it's almost always accurate and prognosticatory and sees the future, creates the opposite of what it intends. And we've been saying that for years and years and years, and a lot of people see it in life. But if you don't see it, you will fail and have to redo your relationship with your difficult child. Let me repeat that. If this isn't somehow becoming inwardly digested, you will fail with your beloved child who has difficulty. And power of it is that it's in the Bible three times in the book of Romans. Now, this is not a Bible talk, but I want to just read this for those who might say, is he verging on something other than the Bible? Paul wrote, law came in to increase the trespass. In other words, the no, when it came in to my relationship with my son, only increased the bad thing that he was doing or the pattern that he was involved in. And then in Romans 7, he says it even more strongly. And when I first found that this to be true, I was shocked that I hadn't heard it before. But it's a little threatening. He said this, if it had not been for the law, I should not have known sin. I would not have known what it is to covet if the law had said, thou shalt not covet. But sin, finding opportunity in the no, wrought in me all kinds of covetousness. For, apart from the law, sin lies dead. Now, that is a very radical statement, and you cannot defuse it or mitigate it from its radicality. In other words, if there were no, there wouldn't be the reaction to the no. Now, the most important thing, and everybody knows this deep down, everyone here knows this deep down because you've been a child and you've had a child, let's say. Maybe you haven't had a child, but you know it from when you were a child. Every time someone tells you not to do something, you are created to react against it and do the opposite. And that is a universal pattern of human existence that explains almost all activity, almost all marriages, career choices, friendships, and trouble is explained by the understanding that human nature is created to do the opposite of what it is told to do. Now, I'm going to read my favorite song from The Fantastics. Now, The Fantastics, some of you know it, was the oldest, longest-running off-Broadway show in the history of New York, and it ran for 46 years. It closed in 1962 and was a massive draw to New York until 1962. And there's a song in it when two fathers are trying to get their children to match up. They're trying to get their adult children, a girl and a boy, to match up. So they realize that the only way to make that happen is what? To forbid each child from seeing the other. And a wonderful man from Texas wrote this song. He's now dead, but he was wonderful. He really got the Christian faith. I'm going to read it, just the part that relates. Dogs got to bark, a mule's got to bray, and children, I guess, must get their own way the minute that you say no. Why did the kids pour jam on the cat, raspberry jam all over the cat? Why should the kids do something like that when all that we said was no? This is the key verse, though. Your daughter brings a young man in, says, do you like him, Pa? Just say that he's a fool, and then you've got a son-in-law. You've got a son-in-law. Have you noticed this? If your daughter, or for that matter your son, but usually it's with your daughter in this case, brings home an insoluble problem. You see it a mile away that this won't work. It's going to only end in tragedy, divorce, and upsetment and hurt. And you know it. We used to see it in New York. 9 out of 10 of the weddings I did in New York, we called it the Crumb Syndrome, C-R-U-M-B. Lovely, delightful, beautiful, college-educated, kind Christian girls would come in bringing the most disreputable, hippie, abusing, ethnic, type of person. And I said, why does it keep happening? Well, Carl Jung explained it later. But the moment that the mother or the father would say, honey, I just have to tell you out of love, you're making a terrible mistake. Instantly, they'd even wouldn't wait for the church. They'd go downtown that afternoon, City Hall, and get married. There was something about the no that created its opposite. So, how to be a good father, point one, is grace is not a no. It's not law. Now, sometimes people will say to me, wait a minute, Paul, that's antinomian. In other words, you know it's wrong. Shouldn't you say it? My answer to that is, I still think it's wrong. I'm traditional in my values from the New Testament. As you know, I haven't changed my mind about traditional New Testament morality. But the question is, how do we achieve it? How do we get someone we love to actually fall into a way of life that will ultimately bless them? Well, one thing I know for sure is that it will not be for me to come on. I've tried it. Has it ever worked with you? Occasionally it works because the person swears that they'll go along with what their father says, but sadly, they're lying to you. Again, and I'm going to say this strongly, Mary says I overstate it, but I would say this principle of don't say no if you want to help a child grow to maturity and fulfillment, I would say it's I've seen it true in 100% of cases. I wish I could say 4/5 of cases. And there may be somebody right here who was told very clearly what not to do and followed suit. But there might be an inward. I'll never forget when we heard the treasurer of our church is somewhere far away. He was impeccable attorney, impeccable corporate attorney, and a wonderful Christian man and a good man and knew what he was doing, and he was 60 years old. And someone came to me one day and said, "Oh, I saw your treasurer at Plato's retreat." Anybody know what Plato's retreat was? It was the first massively open, orgiastic club on the Upper West Side of New York that became famous until it was closed. And it was well known in its day, whatever you do, never even use the word Plato's retreat. And I was told that this man, happily married with grown children, of whom I married one of them, presided, had been seen at Plato's retreat. Don't worry, it's not, he's dead, you know, long since. But isn't that interesting? He's a good man. He's a good man. But his no had somehow led him occasionally into Plato's retreat in his 60s. So the point is, number one, and I'm going to give one other point and then open it up maybe. Whether this sounds like it's not a turn down of traditional morality, you know what this child would do better. You can immediately see the kind of young woman your son would do well marrying. You can see it a mile away. You can deeply understand from your own experience that you should have followed your father's advice about your college major. Your father knew that the major you were in reaction against was going to create terrible conflict in your 30s. But now you realize he was always right. But the way he presented it caused this reaction. So you ended up going in a reactive point. So the point of raising children, and I speak like you, many of you, from experience, we've all gotten that call late night from the police. Maybe not all of us. Of course, you haven't. But, you know, twice, 2 o'clock in the morning, South Carolina, we have someone in custody. Fortunately, it was not a drug offense. It was a driving offense. Dad, I've wrecked so-and-so's car. That was in Pittsburgh. Et cetera, et cetera. And so we've all had moments when we want everything to go right, but it almost always comes out of some form of reactive behavior based upon a no. Now, point two, what is the answer? Is there a how-to of being a good father to a difficult child of any age? And this is the heart of my message. It's going to sound a little sentimental. It's going to sound a little like a cliche, but some cliches are true. There are a few true cliches, like Led Zeppelin's song, Whole Lot of Love. That's a true cliche. Now, I was trying to get you going a little bit, but the answer to helping a child who is difficult and reactive is to lead with love. The effect of belovedness on a wayward child, even through the heart of darkness, the effect of belovedness in 9 out of 10 cases in the long run is positive and beneficial. I've been totally focused recently on Pete Townsend's song, Let My Love Open the Door. Who remembers it from 1981? Let My Love Open the Door. It's one of the great songs. Go home and listen to it. It's only 2 minutes and 47 seconds. Let My Love Open the Door to Your Heart. And they asked Pete Townsend, he dismissed it in 1981. Oh, it's just a little ditty. But 5 years later, they asked him, what was that song about? And he said, well, actually, it's about the love of God. Let my love open the door of your heart. And I would say that leading with love, even in the presence of waywardness, confusion and acting out is the only thing that has the power to create a difference in a person. Now, I'm not quite finished. There's an author that has my attention these days, and don't worry, this is not TMI, you don't need to look him up or anything, but there was an author in the 30s and 40s from England, all of whose novels became Hollywood movies, with one exception, Lost Horizon, for example, and he became the leading scriptwriter in Hollywood. But his first novel has a situation which is extraordinarily apt. In it, a chambermaid in a hotel in Switzerland is extremely bitter. She's 37. She comes from a very fancy Russian aristocratic background after the revolution. Her brother is dead, and she's unbelievably bitter about her life. She can communicate to no one. She's really smart, but she is unbelievably inwardly bitter, and now she's a maid in a hotel. And her life is just going straight down the tubes to absolute suicidal, bitter resentment. Happens that a leading communist Soviet commissar is staying at the hotel, who's a major international figure, and he's there. And for some reason that Hilton cannot understand, but it happens all the time, this Soviet technocrat in 1932 is drawn to this hidden hater of everything he represents. And he's drawn to her in an altruistic way. He's not putting, coming on to her. He actually finds himself loving her. He sees that she's in misery and he wants to do anything to ameliorate her misery. He's reaching across the aisle of human love in a way that is utterly and completely sincere and self-giving. And this is what Hilton writes. It's a short paragraph. Because she's focused, she's the child, focused on her misery and her anger, and he is focused on whatever he can do to love her actually. And this is what happens. She felt more than ever that he might be a part, and probably was a part, of the architecture of all her misery. Yet she also believed that he was someone who held the power of magic cancellation. Now that's the word. She also believed that he held the power of magic cancellation. Was every injustice of her life to be forgiven in the radiance of this man's benevolence? Or must one always be wearied by debts owed and owing? Now, and what happens is her guard comes down. She's incredibly, deeply defended, totally alone in the world. And his love is so altruistic, and he knows nothing about her actual background, except she's really bitter. All the walls come down, and they come together in an almost miraculous way. So what happened there? His love, it was like the Holy Spirit. It was magical because it came from outside herself, and it canceled all the negative vibes that she was putting forth. It literally took away, by its altruism, all the incredible defended reactivity that had created her life a living hell. She's only 37. And as his love, which is to her, she doesn't understand it, but it's sincere, she literally, in front of the whole world, becomes a more open, kindly, genuine, less hurt, and forgiving young woman. So that's what I really wanted to give you. If you're dealing with someone who has a track record at age 35 or age 16 of terribly reactive behavior because of your no, I don't blame you. I once said something to our little son Simeon after he got home from Altamont School that was very upset, and it's something that had happened in his grading for a paper. It's the only time he ever truly burst, he'd let me tell you this, he truly burst into tears at age 10th grade that I had judged him for an academic performance that was not up to his standard. And he just wept in the rectory over there on Lenox. And I realized, I don't think I'd ever done that before consciously. And I must have spent, five different times asking him to forgive me. And he's now, you know, almost 50, 45. I think he has. But that one episode when I bear it in, I lost my cool, and the architecture of his misery had not been canceled by my intervention. And that's what changes everything. And that's why in my podcast this week, the new podcast I did, I used Leon Russell's 1969 song, Roll Away the Stone. Remember that? Someone came up to me today and said, I don't really listen to your podcast, not in Birmingham, someone else. And I'm not that interested in what you're saying religiously. But when I heard you play Roll Away the Stone by Leon Russell, I felt that the light years separating us came down 100%. Isn't that interesting that song could be the thing? So what happens when you magically cancel all the reasons to be reactive to the child, that in most cases gets through. So my last word is, if you're dealing with a difficult child, and like I said, it can be 7 months, it almost always peaks in mid-adolescence, but if it's not somehow healed, it just grows and grows and grows. My closest friend, he and I fought over a Monster magazine when I was 12, and he had a sort of a ACDC, a hoarding mechanism. Don't ever touch this kind of magazine. I was 12, and I said, okay, okay. He socked me. Okay, okay. But when he died 10 years ago, his natural compulsive hoarding mechanism that we saw when he was 12 had so grown that when we went into his apartment in Las Vegas to clean up the week after he died, quite long ago, there were 10,000 such objects piled all over the place. The hoarding as a little boy had turned into a psychopathic degree of really horrible isolation and heaviness. So if you can deal with this leading with love, you could roll away the stone. I really believe this, by the way. You can roll away the stone in the case of a child. And to conclude, never forget the kinks. Never forget the kinks. Because in 1964, they wrote the following song. Is this the start of another heartbreak, girl, or something better beginning? And I would just like to hold out the hope that if there is an issue with a child, is this the start of another heartbreak, girl, or is it something better beginning? Well, that's what I wanted to communicate. Thank you for listening. We can continue our meal, but let's take a few minutes if there's some comments, if there's a comment or a thought as you think about your own, maybe there's an intractable problem that could become a drug problem. It may be that there's a degree of anger that could in fact be acted out in some kind of violent action. It could be that the first marriage didn't work out, but maybe there might be something better beginning in a new relationship. It could be that instead of someone whom you haven't talked to for 3 years, who lives in Denver, who is your daughter or your son, it's possible that a phone call could come through. Any comments or questions? Is that Charlie? Dr. Sharp?
So probably.
Say again.
Speak up. Oh, it's 25 years ago. You had a sermon and you talked about fatherly, that every father leaves a wound like children. And I remember my dad looking up like, so what do you do? You don't have any idea what the wound did.
How do you address it?
Now, you mean, was there a wound, Charlie? Did you yourself identify with that expression? Well, the father wound will prevent you from having a relationship with your father. And there are people who have grudges against their father's judgment upon them. Gosh, a wonderful person not long ago said, well, I love my father, but he didn't give me a car when I was in college. He refused to let me have a car when I was in college. And he also gave me a reduced allowance that he could have afforded more. And I said, well, did you love your father looking back? And he said, no. And he was a good man. He wanted to. So I would say about the father wound, I don't want to say, oh, go to your father and try to get it worked out, you know. But I would say, more importantly, if you have a child who seems to have a father wound, love them as if they didn't have it. And it may go on a while. It could take 12 years. I was so touched the other day. Again, this is all from other places where I've been. I was remembering someone who is deeply, deeply separated from his mom. Wonderful person, but he was profoundly separated inwardly. And as she was dying, she literally did finally take his hand in his, and she actually did say from her own heart, "I love you." And she meant it. That had extraordinary effects on this man, that she actually said it. So you could do that. Instead of talking about my father wound against him, think about the child who's got your father wound. And think about magic cancellation. Another comment, we have time for maybe two, is that Dr. Partridge?
So maybe 40 years ago, what my novel brought home
someone to. We weren't very happy about, and we told her. And of course, she doubled down, just like you said. But we had said no. And maybe 7 months later, 8 months later, her three siblings said the same thing, and that was the end of the relationship.
Is that right? From between the father and the siblings.
Isn't that interesting? You're saying that the three siblings seem to have an effect that the dad and mom couldn't. Well, that shows you, maybe other people have had that happen, that the father-mother role is decisive. That caused the damage. I mean, if I read you right. And that's where we are. So I could do a talk about siblings. That's a whole other issue. Siblings can be extremely hateful to one another. But in this case, it worked. All I want to underline is it's when dad and mom come down on the child, they seem to have no choice but to react with the opposite. And I just so wish it. But if you know that, it'll change how you deal with your adult children, A, let alone your teenagers. Doesn't mean your standards will change. But if you do, if you lead with love, they will, in fact, you will see a diminishment of the pattern in most cases. Anybody else? Is that Bill Moon in the back?
Oh, is there anything you'd like to add about situations that we deal with so often in the church counseling about situations where there is substance abuse involved in child?
Yes.
And how you sort of help through it?
Oh, boy. There are substance abuse issues with 70% of the problems we're talking about. Bill Moon is distinguished because he knows more about the kind of movies I liked from the 1950s than anybody else I've met. And we became close friends over a movie called The Curse of the Faceless Man. Now, I thought it was funny. He thought it was funny, but no one else does. But what I would say, now, there is something in the Bible called the first use of the law. And Episcopalians have that, as did Luther. And what the first use of the law is, there are some situations that are not about moral judgment. They're just about givenness. Givenness. I'm getting to your question. Like you won't let a little baby put his or her finger in a socket, right? That's not a value judgment. That's just done. We used to tell our children when they were growing up, in this family, we go to church. It's a given. It's like turning on the light bulbs. And for some reason, they accepted it. You know, going to church is just something that is done. But we never said, but if you don't go to church when you're 19, you're a bad person. You know, we never did that. But the first use of the law is just looking at the plain facts. And sometimes there's just no question that something has to give. Now, that's true of drug addiction. Nobody who is an alcoholic or an addict can ever be helped in the initial situation by judgment or even by leading with love. Leading with love means you get the child into treatment, 30-day treatment, ASAP. And if they don't, there's nothing you can do until City Hall or something else makes it happen. Someone I know right now in Minnesota, the child's been arrested. He's 40 now, living with his parents. He's been arrested 4 times. He's been 30 days in prison. He's wrecked his marriage. The other day, he broke a window in his aging parents' house and had to go to the hospital because he broke an artery in his arm. He is beyond help. What has to happen there? There has to be a non-consensual decision called the first use of the law that he has got to be treated because he'll die otherwise. So I would just say the first use of the law for real addicts, and I know it from experience, personal experience. Second use of the law when they begin to come out from under the cloud. And then the love. I mean, how many times have we been to treatment centers after the child was basically, you know, dried out? And then you could make huge progress. I hated going to treatment centers because they had all listened to one of our children said about me. You know, if you've ever been to one of those things and you walk in thinking it's going to be a wonderful celebration of your child's new sobriety. And then all of a sudden you're totally attacked for horrible things because they listened. Anyway, that hasn't happened to you. But that's what I would say about that. Yes, Marshall.
In a previous denomination that practiced church disciplined, I noticed, I observed as an elder, whenever the book of church order entered the room, you would see the same equal opposite reaction where somebody would instantly rebel against the elders who were practicing discipline. I never saw it work except once in the way that it was.
You never saw the Book of Order and that discipline work except once. And that, well, I have to say, I was invited to take part in tribunals regarding marital infidelity at Briarwood Presbyterian Church here, and I'd never been at a marital trial for someone, and I just had never been there before. And all that they said was probably accurate, but I just felt, where was the mercy? And I sang to myself the animal song, "We Got to Get Out of This Place." But much as I understood, remember Silas Marner. You all read Silas Marner when you were young, and he's part of a Baptist church in England, and they decide to discipline him for something, basically nothing, and they all turn their backs. And he's completely isolated. And he's got a little child, and he loses his faith because of it. So I share that view. But I don't want to attack. I understand why they have that, but I'm glad Craig has been thinking about establishing a marriage tribunal. And apparently, it's something that the vestry is thinking about. Okay, one more, and then we'll finish, and people can talk a little bit. Jack Williams.
So, you have an adult bow, you screw the one of these steps of penance, sorry, you reboot.
Wait, no, what would say that again?
You have an adult child, you screw up, you know you ordered the what are the steps to repentance? Starting over.
Well, thank you. I lead with love. And we again, I'm not speaking out of a vacuum. We just went there and just never stopped letting him know that we were there to help. And one of the things that we found, and he would not mind, one of our children got into some significant difficulty. And I don't believe in interventions with children because they just will go to Taiwan, you know, they'll just go to Mexico, they'll go to wherever they can to get away. But sometimes there's a moment of complete helplessness of a 21-year-old child, and the father and the mother, or maybe just the dad, feels it's right to go intervene. And so I went to an apartment in New York City that looked like the absolute end of human life, packed with just junk and horrible stuff and a mess, and obviously someone who had had an addiction issue. It was so shocking, I just about cried. I was glad Mary wasn't there. But I said to the person, I don't care what we see, I'm going to clean this up with you, he'd asked. And we spent 3 days cleaning it up. And I remember he needed that. He needed someone who loved him no matter what, who accepted it. We led with love by the grace of God, no lectures. And that person, the next time I took him somewhere was to meet a bishop in England to talk about the possibility of ministry. So I think that's where you sometimes have to take the extra mile, haven't you? Haven't you taken the extra mile? So thank you all for this chance to talk about it. I'm available. Of course, Adam is available to talk about what is important in this new program. And I thank Adam West for his suzerainty, that is, his work on this. And I will say a prayer right now, a short one. Dear God, we all need your help with challenging and sometimes reactive relationships. It seems like the door is closed, yet you told us through Peter Townsend that my love will open the door. Give us possibly a fresh vision of what it is to love this difficult child, and then in your mercy, make it work. Amen.
You've been listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent. If you live in Birmingham or find yourself visiting, we hope you will join us at one of our Sunday services. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.